museum. So first of all, a general comment, and it's worth emphasizing, that in some of the literature that you see, so there is an emphasis that one should not get the impression that hezekiah is not a concern nowadays. That there are certain impressions that you get, especially because some of the dinim, as expressed by the Gemara, and maybe especially in the third parak, where the whole focus is on the buildings being constructed so that the walls and the doors don't face each other, someone might get the impression, okay, it doesn't look like we do this nowadays. It doesn't look like that this is something that is observed, and even if you find, certainly in Eretz Yisrael and in America too, you can find communities that were built from the ground up with the from community in mind, and you still don't find that that was constructed alp what's being described in some of our dinim here. So it's important to emphasize, as contemporary postmen would talk about this do, that one should not get the impression that we don't care about hezekiah anymore. We very much do care about hezekiah, and many dinei Torah are built upon this, and there are those who put forward the case that I shouldn't be subject to rules because the minig is that we don't care about this anymore. The minig is that apparently we have situations that allow for it. So pretty much across the board, it's emphasized and re-emphasized that no, certainly it very much continues to be a thing, to use the translation that we used of Shmei Hezek from the beginning. It's just that the circumstances may sometimes require special evaluation. And yes, minig can determine how it plays out and can determine what people are okay with, but one should not get the impression that there's no more concept of hezekiah and it's not a valid issue for litigation. It very much is, and it very much is adjudicated and practiced at the same time as it is subject to assessment as to how the minig affects the details. So that's important to highlight, and we'll come back to it as well. But also in that context, to note that there, one of the discussions that Rav Zilberstein has, and this is a Hanukkah topic, as we said, so we'll segue into this, we'll discuss it in greater detail as we get closer to Hanukkah, because it's actually one of the most current and controversial topics about Hilchos Hanukkah, specifically in our yeshiva, has huge ramifications. The whole question of what is a chatzer nowadays? The notion that a chatzer had a certain role historically, and that may or may not be true anymore. So to what extent should that affect things? So the Hanukkah background, which I'm just going to allude to, we'll go into much more detail, is that we know that classically Hanukkah candles were lit in chatzeros, and what qualifies as a chatzer in modern usage is a big, big debate, has tremendous ramifications. And a part of it is premised on the idea that maybe a chatzer historically was different than what it is today. So this goes back to the first Rashi in the Masechta, the very first Rashi, that Hashutatfin, Shiyesh Lahem Chatzer B'Shutfis, and in this next line is the key line, V'kol chatzero shoshana chachamim lefnei habatid heim v'rov teshmishin b'chatzer. So the chatzer that we're talking about was in front of the house, and most of what people do, they would use this as an active living space. So that has tremendous significance for Hilchos Hanukkah, because the notion that it's an appropriate place for Hanukkah candles is, as the Chazon Ish understood, tightly connected to that reality. And we have to figure out whether it's still true in our contemporary configurations, or what would equate to a chatzer, what wouldn't. Big ramifications, and we'll talk about this, about lobbies, apartment buildings, dorms, things like that. And maybe for hezekiah, it should also make a difference. So there are some who have raised the issue that if nowadays we don't have a chatzer that was described Talmudically, so there are some who argue that we don't need to have what we would call a chatzer today, a yard of some kind, a front yard, a backyard. Maybe it shouldn't require a fence because we don't have the same scenario of Rosh Tashmish and B'chatzer. So again, this is an argument that hasn't been accepted. It's important to appreciate that. But the Zilberstein makes an observation specifically in a halachic context, right, or more in a textual focus on the Gemara. It's very interesting. So I had mentioned in the past that the Shita Mekubetzes over here has a comment about the fact that the Chatzar is brought up specifically as the example and why it's the opening case in our Mishnah. And we noted the view in the Rishonim that it is a chiddush for either opinion. That the Gemara is going to have the debate, hezek re'iyah, shmei hezek, or lav shmei hezek. So either way, it's significant to know that a chatzar is involved. Because if you're going to say lav shmei hezek, that we're not worried about hezek re'iyah, so then the fact that we're opening the conversation with chatzar is especially important. Because Rov Tashmishin are there. So if even the place where we do most of our activities, we don't have an obligation to worry about Hezek Re'iyah, so then that's particularly noteworthy. So that's something to take as interesting. And it's also there to make the opposite Kiddush. Because if you say Hezek Re'iyah, Shmei Hezek, that we do have to worry about your impact on people who you are looking at. So then you might say, well, a chatzar, it's also open. Okay, we talk about windows, that's different. People don't know when you're looking from a window. But the chatzar is a wide open space, and they can see that you're there, and this is essentially ready in the public eye. So the fact that even there you have to worry about hezek re'iyah is a bigger chiddush. So if you take that perspective, right, so then, it's an interesting point. So when Rashi highlights to us that the chatzeros of their time were used for all kinds of personal purposes, what's the context of that statement? Why is that there? According to what we just said. Right, it's there to tell us that according to the opinion that Hezek Re'iyah is not a thing, Hezek Re'iyah Lav Shmei Hezek, that's true despite the fact that they were doing so much there. Now, how do we paskin about Hezek Re'iyah? That it is Shmei Hezek, right? That it is a Hezek. So then, this comment is not really so significant. The emphasis on the reality of doing most of your activities in the Chatzar was only there to emphasize that even if you were to say, even according to the opinion, that it's not Hezek, that's pretty impressive. Despite all the things they were doing, it's still not Hezek. But we accept the other opinion, that it is Hezek. So therefore, this comment is not really geared, this comment that most activities were done in the Chatzar is not really geared to that opinion, is not really significant, it's not a calculation for that. So therefore, Hilchos Chanukah, okay, that's still a separate story. But as far as any argument that, well, nowadays I shouldn't have to put up a wall to prevent me from looking into your chatzar, you're not doing most of your activities there, it doesn't have the same usage that it classically had, so maybe that's not necessarily relevant. It's not necessarily something that is so significant. Okay, so far so good? So that's one point. There is another interesting tshuva I saw at a different sefer that happened to also quote Rav Zilberstein about one of the scenarios over the past decade when there was a situation of war in Eretz Yisrael and Israelis were being forced to go into the miklat under very extreme circumstances. And it was a constant. There were days of shelling, and not enough time. The warnings were so brief, not enough time to run to the miklat. It was a big public miklat. And many families, many families, they described this scenario, when I was reading, described 15 families would have to cram into one miklat and basically hang out there for extended periods of time. So there was really no privacy between families in this kind of a setting. So there were those who argued that we should put up some kind of dividers because of Hazikriya. And others disputed this. And they said that Hazikriya is defined by Minig, and Miklat usually doesn't make divisions for different people in a shared space. And it's going to create even more anxiety and even more confinement to try to subdivide this area, which is cramped as it is, and having these subsections. So they argued Minig Medina. So one side was arguing Hazikriya, and the other side was arguing Minig Medina. So how would you decide on this issue? What would you think? Yeah, Al?
We didn't say that Minhag can if the Minhag is not to put up walls in a chatzer, that would make any difference.
Right.
So the Minhag determines what kind of wall it is.
Correct. Right. So now the question is, but our Mishnah does make different distinctions. So, for example, Agina has different rules, and we don't know if this really is comparable to a chatzer. How do you classify a miklat?
At least one way I've seen is that the Gina, you're not really doing that much there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a place where you actually spend a significant amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But miklat, I mean, here they're spending all of their time there.
Or at least, you know, under these temporary circumstances. Yeah?
I think it would still fundamentally be a Rosh Hashanah. I mean, you can't paint it, you can't do anything with it. So you might desire privacy, but in no way can it be considered yours. And it seems like it would be similar to being on the street.
You know, it's interesting. Also, it happens not to be discussed in this context, but you find this elsewhere, that later in Choshen Mishpat and Kuf Ayin Aleph, where we talk about schiras, we talk about rented areas. So there, the Torah says that you have renters who shared a space, and then they decided to split it up. So they can't necessarily force each other to build a wall. And there, the Bach explains that it's because the investment is not going to be there. So the effort to build this wall at some cost, and then they're all going to move on because they don't own the place. So they can't be expected to invest in a wall that's not going to actually be theirs, which is also, as we saw in the Mishnah, a big part of the focus of what happens later on if a wall needs to be fought over. So there is some aspect of that. In the context of this tshuva, it wasn't the focus, because they were talking about basically cheap dividers, and it wasn't so much of a focus on the expense, and the objection wasn't that the other side didn't want to spend, but it was they just didn't want to have it there at all. So how do you classify that? Who's right? Is there a minig here, or is there a self-evident hazikriya? Yeah, your own?
I'd say maybe you could say that in one aspect it's kind of circumstance that doesn't normally occur. But at the same time, the Rambam made it seem like we don't really care what the minhag is, you're chayav to put up a wall.
But in a chatzer, right? So the question is this a chatzer or not? Because we do find context where it is minhag dependent.
Right.
So how do you classify this?
Well, I guess if that's where you're technically you're living for however much time,
mm-hmm.
then technically that's become your, I guess, home for that duration of time while you're there. So maybe that would be considered some sort of living space.
Yeah, it is some kind of living space, but I guess the question is, do the other factors prevail in terms of the impact? So the surprising conclusion here is that you're both right. Whoever you two are, whoever takes either side, because Zilberstein essentially concluded, or didn't conclude, that the factors here are not really determinable. That to say whether this is in a category where Hezekriya is a clear obligation, or to say that it's in a category where there is a minig, that sounds a little funny to call it a minig, because these are circumstances where, in general, the people don't really have much control over what they're choosing to do, and they're basically forced into this space. The language of minig seems a little bit like a poor fit, But nonetheless, it's enough of a factor to leave the issue unresolvable. So he basically said you should take a poll. And they have to find what most people want. And most people want the dividers, so they should have the dividers. Most people don't, so then that essentially would define the minhag. It's a very interesting conclusion. And then he says there also, to just kind of substantiate the point a little bit from a conceptual point of view, that we know that the value of the walls as a moral value is expressed in the third parak, the whole reference to Bilam, and the notion of Matovo Halacha Yaakov, that your tents are so good. And why are they good? They're good because they're built in a tzanuadika way. So he writes there that Tov is a term that is defined based on what it's being applied to. So if you were to say, he says there, if you were to say that this is a good hammer, so you wouldn't mean that it's a beautiful hammer, because you don't really care what the hammer looks like in order to say it's good. You care that it's strong. And then if you were to go on to say this is a good painting, so you wouldn't mean that it's a strong painting, because you don't really care how strong a painting is, you care how beautiful it is. So the word good takes on different definitions depending on what you're dealing with. So when you have your general residence, so a part of what makes that residence good is that it helps to supply that tznius that is both desired and required within Jewish society. But when you are dealing with a miklat, which has a different emphasis, different priority, so then you have to figure out what tov is. Not so obvious what is going to constitute tov. And he notes that you would need to have some kind of a poll in order to determine that. It's a very interesting conclusion. Another issue that he discusses elsewhere, what would you think about the following? So let's say you have two parties and they have a space between them. So theoretically, they have an obligation of a chatzir. So there, you have an obligation to have a wall between the two of them, assuming at least one of them wants it. Right? So each one has the right to compel the other to agree to build the wall. But if neither of them cares, so then okay, you could live without it. But let's say you have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven doesn't want the wall. And Shimon says, I want the wall. However, you happen to know that Shimon doesn't really care so much. I guess we could throw in, just to prove it, this isn't a part of his description, but maybe this makes the issue a little more compelling. Let's say Shimon has a neighbor on the other side, the exact same scenario, and he doesn't care about a wall there. So why is he telling you he wants the wall? So you know why. Because he wants to build a sukkah. And this is a good way to, sukkahs nowadays are more expensive than they used to be. Despite the fact that the Gemara and Avodah Zarah call sukkah a mitzvah kala, and Rashi says that there's no chisar and kiss, there's no expense involved in a sukkah, which is interesting because nowadays to build any kind of a sukkah is going to cost you a lot of money. So this guy figures, okay, I have to have a wall in between me and my neighbor anyway, and my neighbor has to pay for half of it. So this way, at least I'll get, you know, one, I guess the sukkah has three walls, I'll get 1/6 of my expenses, we're not counting the schach. I'll get a small percentage of my expenses defrayed because my neighbor has to pay for half of a wall. So you suspect that's what's going on. So he's not really motivated by the hezekri at all. He is motivated by the desire to have a sukkah. You still have to split with him. You still have to pay for half of this wall. What do you think? Any thoughts? No votes on this one? Yeah, Shmuel?
I would think in general intention doesn't matter.
Okay.
You would have to build it up.
Okay, so why would you say that? You think you're probably right, but why would you say that?
The minhag, I guess, when someone requests to build, like, we don't know. You can't know what that we say. You build a wall when someone requests, and he's requesting. So that's what we do.
Okay, so yeah, that clearly helps. He says also a little bit more that there are other sources that sometimes indicate when somebody has a right, and they want to invoke that right. So sometimes it does matter what's motivating them, whether it's because of the reasoning behind the right or it's for some ulterior purpose. Except here he says that it clearly is the ratzon, together ratzon ha'torah, together with the whole tznius factor and the like, that there be a wall there. So together with the fact that this is generally desirable, so, and there is this takana that the other party has the right to demand it, it becomes much less relevant whether he's demanding it because of the actual motivation of the takana or any side part. So there he also agrees with Shmuel that it's not up to us to decide it's because of the sukkah. Nonetheless, there is this right that he has, and if he asks for it, he's entitled. Okay, so let's move on to another point. So here, if you had a chance to see, did you get a chance to look at Rashash? It was on this morning's source, a couple of other things. So here, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch, which we've referred to. And presumably, because the way it's in Shulchan Aruch, it should be the bottom line. But it's interesting to note that there is some controversy about it, and it also goes to the whole goal and understanding of what's going on in our broad sugi here. That the question of what's the din if you have two neighbors, and normally they have to split from the wall, but one neighbor has twice as much property as the other. So how should they pay for the wall? 50-50 or 66-33. And the one who has twice as much space, should he pay two-thirds? What would you say? How do you allocate the cost of the wall when the two neighbors are dealing with unequal space? Shmuel?
I mean, on the one hand, the person who has more property benefits more, but, like, at the same time, like, he could not care about the wall, and the other person could force the wall onto him. Meaning, like, just because he has more property doesn't necessarily, like, not that it's not his fault, but, like, it, he's, like, he may be forced into participating. And,
right.
Like, why should he have to participate more? Because he has more land.
Okay. Like,
I was going to say, he doesn't benefit more. One person doesn't want to see about the other, don't see want to see about one. So
economics,
the same exact benefit.
Okay, so in Shulchan Aruch, you saw that it quotes from the view of the Ramah that it's 50-50, regardless of space differential. And that, presumably, is for the reasoning that Yossi is saying, that if it's motivated by hezekiah, so it doesn't matter that one has more space than the other. Essentially, it's about stopping the other guy from seeing you. Each one has that same motivation. So it doesn't matter how unequal it is. And if you look at the Bir HaGrah, so the Vilna Gaon explains that then based on the Mishnah, which is going to be our jumping off point as soon as we transition to that, but the Mishnah on Dalet Amud Beis, that states, I'm going to take a look for a second, the brief Mishnah says, HaMakif is Chaveri Misholosh Ruchosav. So you have somebody, you have one neighbor who surrounds his neighbor from three directions. Presumably has a lot more space here. He's basically almost swallowing him up. And this guy decides he wants to make a wall around this property, so he makes a wall in the three directions that he borders the other neighbor. So, okay, that was his decision. We don't make this other neighbor share in the expenses. But to be honest, Omer, im amad v'gider asarvias. If the other neighbor says, "Okay, I'm lucky. I got three sides of my property with a wall now, so let me take advantage of the situation and fill in the fourth wall, so I'll have total enclosure." So then, megalgul nabasakol. So then we put the whole thing on him, and we don't mean the whole thing because why should the whole wall? But he pays half. He has to participate in the whole wall. As Rashi says. Rashi explains there, Allah says, Chelko v'shloshes harishomos, to pay his portion of the first three. the chayv and the gadar sar pesuach li dait nichalei b'mayt the gadar chaver. That since he decided to finish off the project, so that showed that he was happy about what happened until now. Now, this is a major sugya in its own right, and in Be'ez Hashem, it's a little bit of a preview to this, what we will be up to very soon, this is what we'll be skipping to. But just to evoke in this context, so the Vilna Gaon says, you see that this guy presumably has much smaller property, that's the whole picture that's being thought that's being painted here, and yet he only needs a smaller part, yet he has to pay 50% of everything. So apparently, that's the way to do it. And that's what explains the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. But if you look at the Rashash over here, the Rashash is writing significantly later. The Shulchan Aruch, Rashash lived in the 1900s. But the Rashash, he thought that this was not such an obvious way to see things. And Rashash poses the question and inclines towards a different conclusion. Every Gemara has a Rosh Hashanah in a different place. Let's try to find it.
In the Al-Kibbe
Farshim. Yeah, so in this one, it's in the Al-Kibbe Farshim. So if you look at the very beginning, there you go. Mixing everything else here. Here somewhere.
I think it's the bottom.
It's on the bottom, yeah.
Oh, yes, there it is. Thank you. Right. There it went. Okay, so the very first line is the Rosh Hashanah Masechta. He says, L'chara hayinire, d'zeh einu ela kishulchachei en shavim. Right, the premise of the Mishnah, that you split it 50-50. So Rosh Hashanah says, it seems like it would make sense that this should only be when you have 50-50 property. If one side is bigger than the other, that basically everyone should pay proportionally. So if one has greater space, so then it should be that way. Come on, it's similar to what we see later in the parak, and Zayin obeys the Govin Lefi Mamon, that when it comes to communal needs, so then we collect basically. You collect basically proportionate to the wealth, which is a different point. It's interesting to compare it to. It's one thing to say that you collect proportionally to their ability, which is what's also going to be a part of it. Here he's saying that you collect proportionally to their benefit. And then he goes on to acknowledge that's not the din in Shulchan Aruch. He says, Avalochin kasav hator Shulchan Aruch sumit kufnin zayin siv gimel. So practically speaking, that seems to be the bottom line of the halacha, that the Rosh Hash is arguing with the concept. It says that he wouldn't have thought that makes sense. He doesn't think that the Gra's proof is sufficient, and if we're up to him, he would have said differently. But again, practically speaking, it would seem like the Shulchan Aruch is the bottom line here. But it's interesting to note that the Rosh Hash disagrees. So what seems to emerge here is a fundamental machlokas about what is really driving this. That the, as the Chazon Ish notes, that on the one hand, what Yossi said seems to be true, that if it's based on Hezek Ra'iya, so then they're each equally relevant to those factors, so it should be 50-50, it doesn't matter how much space is involved. But the notion that one might see differently seems to connect to these other issues. Like, for example, we mentioned a minute ago about the fact that you could use the wall for a sukkah wall, or you could use the wall for other things. So you saw, if you had a chance to see today, I put on the Nebuki Yosef, quotes the Ra'ah, that if you have one neighbor who decides, let me build the whole thing, and I'll have it on my property, and you can use it if you want to. So the other neighbor can object, and he says that I don't want to pay you for the usage or get it for free, but I do want to use it. I want to be able to lean against the wall, so I don't want it all to be on your property. So that seems to suggest that even though Hezekiah is what motivated this whole thing, but ultimately we do recognize that the wall provides other benefits to these residents, and those benefits are baked into the takana. That's a part of how this relationship is supposed to work. And therefore, that should also play out that the one who's getting more benefit should have a greater hotzah involved, should have a greater expense, because ultimately the benefit of the wall, beyond it being visible, beyond it impacting on the visibility, is also a factor. Okay, so far so good? Everyone with me? All right, so we'll just a little bit over time. Just mention one more issue, and then I'll let you go. Sorry to keep you over time. But we also mentioned yesterday the question of what happens if neither of them can afford it, and they have inability to pay for it. So we mentioned yesterday that what says in the Ramah is that, okay, they're not going to have a wall. They've got to try as hard as they can not to spy on each other. But that it doesn't mention that the Torah also wrote that you should turn to tzedakah for this. And we spoke about what kind of tzedakah that is. Is it tzedakah because you're trying to perform a mitzvah, or is it tzedakah because this really is a basic human need? And Yaron was kind enough to send around the Aruch HaShulchan in general. I'm so appreciative of everybody's looking out for each other and always sending around original sources, part of the beauty of the whole WhatsApp format that allows for such easy communication, but also the fact that the guys are motivated to share, so it's a sense of nachas. So thank you all for doing that. So if you saw the Aruch HaShulchan, who highlighted this as a personal need, so Zilberstein has a little comment about this. Says, so what would you say? Let's say you have two people who can't afford it. If stock is available, they'll take from stock. If not, not. So maybe we should say they're obligated to go take on some extra work in order to afford this. This is something that is important enough that they can't just be sanguine about it and say, well, what can you do? There's no money. Maybe they're obligated to go out and earn more money in order to be able to build the fence. What do you think about that?
Is that a more general question?
Mm-hmm. No, about stock in general. Right. So but that relates also... Right, so that relates also to when, it is a broader question, maybe I shouldn't bring it up just under the wire because it's a longer discussion, but the complicated factors are that, let's say somebody has basic eating needs, something like that, so, you know, they doesn't have food to eat, so then we can talk about whether we should provide from stucco or should there be more of an obligation to work. But here, let's say the stucco is not going to be available, so it's either they'll go without or... Should we say they're obligated to work in order to do that? Or if tzedakah is available, should we say that this is not the ideal use of tzedakah? And that's one thing to say, we'll feed people from tzedakah whether they work or not. But to say that they should build a wall, that they surely be their own personal responsibility. So he has an interesting discussion about this. He points to Chazanish again, has a lot to say about these things. And it's also a little bit of an open question, but it really goes to basically, are we saying this is a basic human need? It's no different than other lodging questions or food and clothing, and it's just so basic that this is something that we comfortably take from tzedakah? Or is it really kind of only a unique detail here that really ideally we wouldn't take from tzedakah? So he considers both tzedakah, and it's just an interesting expansion of this issue. How exactly we look at this basic obligation. Okay, so those are a few points. Just to quickly recap, we spoke about the question of are things different nowadays, and we'll eventually talk about Hanukkah. And we talked about the question of the unusual situation of the miklat, what's that, a mimic versus Hezekiah. And we talked about the question of somebody insists on the wall, but you know it's not because of Hezekiah, he wants to build a sukkah. And we talked about the question of how should we divide the obligation of the cost between two unequal sized properties. And then finally this question about taking from tzedakah. So is that something that should be avoided? Is that something that we should tell people they should work for? And various issues associated with that. I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.